Jam!
Hello again and welcome back to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. I am Chewy, and I am joined this week, as usual, by everyone's favorite, I don't know. How would you describe yourself, everyone's favorite?
Noun.
But everyone's favorite noun, Squee.
Ha, take that, SeaWorld. Hi.
Wait, was SeaWorld everyone's favorite noun?
I hope not, but I beat it because I'm the favorite noun. It's one of those places that seemed magical, and then you got older and realized how horrible it is for animals, and now it makes you sad.
Great, now I'm sad. Thanks, Bill.
See? That's what SeaWorld does, not me. Bam, better.
All right, then.
You're welcome.
Well, I guess I have no response to that, so I'll just ignore it. This weekend was Pro Tour Ixalan, because that's the thing that happens periodically.
Yeah, and they don't happen right after the set comes out anymore, so you had to wait for it.
Like, wait for it? Like that?
Stay on target.
Nice. So this was, of course, it's Pro Tour. Well, there's a time when I could say this and it would just be understood. Of course, it's Pro Tour, so it's standard and limited. That'll be changing here soon.
Yep.
Again.
Which means that we need to remind you as we start going over the winners and the decks and all that, that people can win without the best deck because limited is a factor. And people with the best deck cannot win for the same reason. So
yes.
Don't just look at the top eight and assume that's it.
Yes. Very, very yes. So of course, well, maybe not of course, you might not know this. You might be waiting on us to tell you the news. But Seth Manfield walked away with the whole thing. The whole kit and caboodle, as it were.
They took the kit and the caboodle, and then they melted them down. They sprayed them with some of that orange Nickelodeon stuff, and bam, magic trophy.
Oh, that is made out of former kit and caboodle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh, how about that?
I like to pretend that they melted down some of those old Kid Choice Awards, too. Because that's a very proprietary color of orange.
Well, no, it's totally mythic orange. It's not Nickelodeon orange. Shut up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, be a damn shame if it was wrong and they had to change the logo or something.
No, now the nerds are going to rage at us. But anyway, yes, Seth Manfield won. He was playing Sultai Energy, which is a thing that you'll hear a lot of.
Popular choice.
Yeah, from this event. Actually, I guess the Sultai Energy was actually... So there were the top three decks, and then the first of everything else was Sultai Energy.
Yeah.
Because it only comprised... So, we also have the metagame breakdowns for day one and day two.
Yeah.
The links to those are in the show notes, so you don't have to dig through the god-awful amounts of Pro Tour coverage like we did. We just put the links there for you. So, the top three decks were Teemer Energy for day one, you know, when everyone was counted. Teemer Energy at 23.6%. Ramanop Red... And four color energy at 19.6% of the field apiece. And then the first of the rest was Sultai Energy with 5.1% of the
field. Bit of a drop.
Just a bit, yeah. So it was over 62% on day one of the top three decks. And then everything else was the other 40%.
Yeah.
So on day two, however, that changed slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Teemer Energy was 23%. Ramanop Red was 22%. Four Color Energy was 19.9%.
Yeah.
So there's still 63% of the field on day two was those three decks. But Sultai Energy was still the top of the rest at 5.9%, which was 17 decks.
I think my favorite thing about this list is actually the conversion rate for day one to day two.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking over conversion rates, like Teemer Energy was 62%, and that was the most popular deck.
Mm-hmm.
But the second, third, and fourth most popular decks, in fact, down a ways, all of these other ones had better conversion rates, in part because they weren't the most popular deck. But when you scroll down a bit, I'm entertained that of all things, Mono White Vampires had a 100% conversion rate.
Yeah, further down in the day two metagame breakdown... is a list that's sorted by conversion rate taking out everyone who had less than five.
Yeah.
Players on day one. And yeah, Mono White Vampires, all five of the people playing it made day two. And White Blue Approach, 8 out of 10 players made it to day two. So, huh.
Yeah, they should go on and become doctors who review things.
Well, then we'd have to cut half of them out because it's only 4 out of 5. You can't say 8 out of 10. That's weird.
That's true. That's more suspicious.
Yeah.
What are those guys up to? But yeah, so like this is pretty neat if you're a number crunchy kind of person.
Yeah. I just think it's really funny. Well, maybe not funny, really telling how the top three decks in day one are still the top three decks in day two with extremely similar percentages of the field.
Yeah.
So yeah, but like I said, Seth Manfield is playing the top of the rest of the decks with Sultai energy. But really, other than like a Scarab God, I don't really know if there's much to talk about.
Yeah, like if you're coming to the Pro Tour and you're expecting this to be, and then out of nowhere a rogue deck shows up and a team pilots it completely to victory, this is not that kind of Pro Tour.
Like, yeah, not really.
Those don't happen as often as people like to pretend they do.
Oh, it's really sweet when it does.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And that's when you see the ridiculous card value swing and all that stuff. But this time around, like, I'm just going to tell you, the top eight is not full of surprises. Like,
not so much, no.
That said, it is worth discussing, but...
Yeah. Also...
tell you where things fall.
For the purposes of being completely honest, I didn't watch any of this Pro Tour because BlizzCon. Sorry. I was watching lots of BlizzCon announcements in the Heroes of the Storm Global Championships.
That's fair.
Which was sick, by the way. But anyway, so that's Seth Manfield in first place. Very nice. In second place, we have Pascal Maynard, who was playing one of the aforementioned white-blue God Pharaoh's Gifts decks. And it was pointed out to me on Twitter. Who was this? Scroll... by Volrath's Bane. He says, it just hit me how weird it is that Standard has a top reanimator deck that has no black and whose top target is a 5-mana 2/1. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I never thought of it in that way. The God Pharaoh's Gift is totally a reanimator deck whose main target is the Angel of Invention.
Yeah.
And that makes my head hurt so much.
Mind you, it's only sometimes a 2/1.
True. So, yeah, that's... I mean, again, there's really not much to talk about here because it's totally that deck.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So, moving on then. In third place, John Rolfe is running a Ramanop Red because, of course, you had to have one of those in the top eight because it's the other big deck, right?
I mean, I would hope so. As a fan of Red...
I guess we haven't seen the other two, but they're there.
Soon.
So yeah, the Ramanop Red deck is... I mean... it's got... the cards you'd expect. Although, I guess there were a few variations on this one. So this one's got the Harsh Mentor and Kari Zev and two Rampaging Ferocidons, Soulscar Mage. Like, not all of these cards are in all of the versions of this deck. But yeah, that's what won.
Yeah.
Or what made the top eight, rather. So, moving on, we've got Samuel Illenfelt. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is running Mardu Vehicles. Bet you didn't expect to hear that, did you?
Well, you should.
Because it's still there. Still good. It's got Hazoret in it.
You think Hazoret the Prevert drives a van?
Is it? Does he park it down by the river?
I mean, it's probably where he lives.
All right. So round it, that was the top four. After that, we have Mike Sigrist, who lost out in the quarterfinals running 4-color energy. And again, it's pretty much the deck we've been seeing for the last however long. I do want to know why there are so many Vizier of Many Faces in sideboards for these decks, though. So if someone would like to tweet at us, please do let us know, because we've seen a lot of Vizier of Many Faces.
Specifically in terms of, like, what he's copying?
Yeah, like, Well, not him necessarily, but why are there so many in sideboards? Because there's like one or two in all of these blue something energy decks.
Oh, so specifically like what you bring it in for?
Yeah. Like what's its purpose in the board and why is it so prevalent? Because as we get, like, look at later decks, there's just always at least one or two in sideboards. It's very weird to me.
Anyway. Yeah.
He does have Vraska in here. Is that new?
We've seen Vraska before.
In the four-color energy deck?
Okay, so I'll be honest. There are a lot of energy decks that have a lot of overlap.
That is true.
So I can't definitively say we haven't, but I've seen Vraska in energy decks before.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's in the other one in the top eight, too, so we'll just assume that it's been there.
I mean, admittedly, pirates tend to show up where you don't expect them. It's kind of their job.
That is true. So in sixth place, we have Christian Hawk running Teemer Energy.
Look, there it is.
Again. And yeah, again, there's really not much special going on here to the untrained eye. So, In seventh, we have Guillaume Matignon running Jeskai Approach. And that's Approach of the Second Sun, in case, you know, you've been living under a rock. He's only running two, but that's probably fine since you only need to cast it twice.
Yeah.
He's also got Search for Ascanta, Torrential Gear Hulk, and everything else is just card draw and control. You know, like you'd expect. Seems good. Rounding out the top eight, we have, I've always wondered how you pronounce this name properly. Do you know, Bill? Like, I've been reading X-Men comics since I was a kid, so I recognize it when I see it, but how to actually say it properly, I don't know.
How do you think you say it?
I have no idea. Like, everyone, after a while, just started calling him Peter. Colossus, you know.
Yeah. I think it just is Peter.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, his last name is Glagowski, so he gets points for that. But yeah. He's running also four-color energy. A little different, but it's still four-color energy, so.
Oh, so I did a search. The Vizier of Many Faces is good to bring in against Scarab God, or Scorpion God, or Locust God.
Oh.
Because of their... When it dies, it still has their effect.
Really?
So, yeah, it can go back to hand when it dies, just like the gods do.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we forgot to point out, in Guillaume Matignon's Jeskai Approach deck, he's got a Locust God in the board.
Yeah, that would do it.
He's also got Beryl, Chief of Compliance. Beryl.
You know, Beryl Roll, Chief of Compliance.
Yeah, in the board as well. So yeah, that's the top eight. Not really much to write home about. Not really. If you're going to write home about something, I hope it's going to be something better than this.
Like maybe you're writing home about BlizzCon.
What? Yeah, we'll go with that actually. Yeah. Write home about BlizzCon. Tell your mother you love her and how awesome.
Let your mom BlizzCon know. Was. Hey, check it out. Nova Skin. Awesome. Your mom would be like, oh, I love that. Because she'll remember her StarCraft days.
Oh, God. So, just looking at more of the decks. Like
Bill said. You want to go down to another high-ranking one?
Well, yeah. Like Bill said, because limited is a factor, they have the deck lists listed very strangely. Rather than, you know, well, here's where everyone finished. Because... you could tank your drafts, but still go, you know, X and O or X and one with your constructed decks. So we've got some Ramunap Red, four color energy, more of each, Sultai energy. Okay. Teemer, white, blue cycling. Okay. Here's a weird one. I actually hadn't seen this deck before, but it's running Drakehaven. Whenever you cycle or discard a card, pay one to get a 2/2 flyer. And it's got lots of things that cycle.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, like the whole whenever you do set mechanic, pay mana, get benefit is pretty common design, but it doesn't usually make it actually into constructed decks. It's usually more of a limited thing. But control decks love cycling. So well, if you can afford to take a turn off to do that, you're set.
Very true. I also think that the existence of Abandoned Sarcophagus makes this a more of a thing. You may cast non-land cards with cycling from your graveyard. And if a card with cycling would be put into your graveyard from anywhere and it wasn't cycled, exile it instead. So you can cycle stuff away and then use it when you need it.
Yeah. Because you really don't need to play the Abandoned Sarcophagus until later.
Yeah.
Not till you need it. And if you're, like, if you can get the Drakehaven down, like, it's kind of awkward in a deck like this to just drop an enchantment on a turn rather than, you know, leave your control up. But this isn't really, like, as heavy of a counterspell deck. It's got two counterspells.
Yeah, it's got Censor, Countervailing Winds. Wait, is that it?
I think that's it for counterspells. Like, it's got a lot of, like, exile things.
Yeah.
Like, it lets some things resolve, and I think that's the idea, is that you can afford to play an enchantment, let them actually stick something, and then deal with it.
Yeah, and all the while, you're digging through your deck and making 2/2s.
Yeah.
So, you know, seems good.
Yeah, I could see that working.
But, I mean, this is in the, where am I at here? 8/2 pile.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Which is pretty good.
Because you mentioned that, the highest ranking decks in this pile, the 27-point decks, were the two Ramunap Red at the start and a 4-color energy.
Yeah.
So those were the, like, 9-1 decks.
True.
Unpolluted by their limited results.
So let's see. What else? There's a Mono White Vampires deck here right below it.
Yeah, dude.
That is...
Metallic Mimic?
Okay, hang on. I haven't seen this deck either. So we've got Oketra's Monument, which makes your white creatures cheaper and gets you warriors, 1/1s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got Duskborn Skymarcher, 1/1 with a combat ability. Sure, give a vampire, attacking vampire, +1/+1. Aviary Mechanic, a 2/2 for 2. When it enters the battlefield, you bounce another permanent you control. I'm guessing that you could bounce the Legion's Landing, and that'd be pretty good.
Probably.
Adanto Vanguard, that vampire who gets +2/+0 when it's attacking, and you can pay 4 life to make it indestructible. Metallic Mimic, which will pump all of your vampires. Legion Conquistador, that's another thing you could bounce. Search for other Legion Conquistadors. I guess you don't really need to bounce it unless you didn't go get all 4, or all 3.
Yeah.
Mavern Vane, the Dusk Apostle. Oh, the Angel of Intervention, you probably want to bounce here and there. Make more dudes.
Yeah, like if you have the mana for it.
With Oketra's Monument, hey, it makes it even cheaper.
Yeah.
And then you have Thopter Arrest, Cast Out, Ixalan's Binding, you know, all those things. Oh, and Shefet Dunes. Ooh, nice. 4-tap Sack of Desert. All your dudes get +1/+1 until end of turn. Seems good. So there you go. It's the mono white. It's white weenie with vampires. Hey. Let's see. We've got more. Marta Vehicles, Tamer Energy. Matt Nass is playing nothing. There's no doubt. I mean, this is clearly Tamer Energy, but still.
It's a meta choice.
Sultai, Tamer, 4-color, Ramunap Red. Okay, yeah. Like we said, there's not terribly much going on that's surprising. In 23 points. Oh, hey, here's Seth Manfield. 7/1/2. He went with his Sultai Energy deck and ended up winning the whole thing. Oh, here's Pascard Maynall. Here's Pascal Maynard, too, at 7/1/2.
Do you guys see the value of being good at limited yet?
For a Pro Tour, yes. More energy, more energy, more energy, more energy.
More.
Good lord, look at all this. This is insane. Green, blue, pummeler.
Huh.
Which is an energy deck that focuses on the pummeler.
One with the wind.
Here, what is this? This is Ramunap Red with Chandra in the main. Okay. What is this? This is Sultai Energy, I think. Blue, black, green. No, this is four color. With Gonti. Hey, buddy. Sorry, a couple of these are just missing the name, so I have to actually look at the deck.
Yeah.
Energy, energy, red. Energy, red. Mono, black, aggro. Andreas Prost. Bone Picker, Glint Sleeve Siphoner, Dread Wanderer, Night Market Lookout, Vicious Conquistador, what? Bantu, Yeheni, Bantu's Last Reckoning, Walk the Plank, Fatal Push, Vraska's Contempt, and Aether Sphere Harvester and Heart of Kirin, because why not? Okay, that's definitely, that's Black Weenie. I like it.
Mono Black, where you can run three if no Dreadlands, or Deadlands. My land kills you!
What is Ifnir Deadlands? Put two -1/-1 counters on target creature and opponent controls. Ugh. Nice.
I mean, if you don't need that mana anymore. Probably don't.
Not in this deck. Here's another approach deck. Red, energy, energy. Grixis Control. Oh yeah, we've seen this before. Okay. What is this? More Tamer Energy. Yeah. Oh, green, white aggro. What's this? Resilient Kenra? Whoa.
Jackal Wizard.
When it enters the battlefield, have target creature get +X/+X, where X is Resilient Kenra's power. Oh, and it's got Eternalize. Okay, yeah, that guy.
Yep.
Kinjala Sunwing. Ooh. Brutal. Creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. Wow, it's
Sophia
got...
Pashiri.
Yeah, it's got Pashiri in here. Huh. And Oketra. Huh. Well, that's really cool.
You're looking for something different.
Yeah.
Looks fun.
That's pretty neat.
You get to play with dinosaurs.
I mean, just the one.
Yeah. But like it's a different dinosaur than people usually run into.
Sure.
Kind of neat.
Here's a blue-black Godfarer's Gift. Travis Wu. What's he? Oh, Scarab God. Ugh.
Spooky.
There's a Kitesail Freebooter always showing up. Oh, and that's the end. Okay. So that's the 20 to 23 pile. Oh, what the heck? We looked at the rest. 18 to 20. 18 to 20 doesn't want to load. You know what? Should we bother?
I think we can. They can find it. So when you go to the page for Pro Tour Exelon, you have to scroll down to the second listing of articles. The one that says full coverage archive, and then you have to expand it a few times under show more articles to find these things. It took us a moment, so just be aware of that.
Oh, it loaded. Here we go.
Oh, you got it?
That was weird. Whoa, okay, hold on. It's like the 5th one down. Abzan Tokens. It's running Crested Sunmare. Nice.
Horse is amazing.
It is, and it makes all your other horses amazing.
It makes them indestructible.
And it gives you more horses.
Well, horses do that if you give them enough time.
Yeah, that's true. Sacred Cat.
Although that's kind of sick. 5/5 horse creature a turn.
At the end of each end step, if you've gained life this turn. So try to find a way to gain some life during your opponent's turn, because then it's terrible.
Which I'm sure you can.
Terrible for them. Treasure Map, Renegade Map, Hidden Stockpile, Legion's Landing, Anointed Procession. Start to finish. Yeah. Looking at this again, I think we've seen it before. It's just been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I was wondering if it had enough tokens in it to make it work. And people told me, yeah, if you play it, you can tell it's just running over with tokens. I was like, nice.
Yeah.
Here's a white-black tokens right under it. So, yay tokens. Black-red aggro. That's the same thing we saw before, but with... Hazoret and some burn. Okay. Blue black control. Teemer Pummeler. More energy. Ramunap red. More aggro of the black red variety. Well, this one's got the. How do you say that? The Dund operative? D H U N D? I've never actually had to pronounce this card out loud.
I would assume it's Dund.
The Dund operative. As long as you control an artifact, it gets +1/+0 and has death touch, and it's a 2/2 for two.
It's a 3/2 for two with touch.
Yeah,
they're fine.
More Abzan tokens, more black red aggro, lots of energy of various flavors, more control. So yeah, once you start to get further down, and where are we now? What section are we in here? This is the scrolling up looking for the score.
Section header.
Here we go. This is 6-4, so this isn't even great. Like, this isn't even would have gotten you day two at a GP.
Yeah. Suffice it to say, everyone here is playing in a ridiculously hard field, and we don't mean to take that away from them. It's just, after a certain point, we would have to read over the entire field.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a Pro Tour, so, you know, 6-4 at a Pro Tour in Constructed is still way better than most, but still.
Yeah.
What Bill said.
And for the record, there were 452 people in this Pro Tour, so as we get further down the list, each section's going to be way bigger.
Oh, here's LSV, running four-color energy. Yay. So, yeah, there you go. Nope, wrong button, sorry. See, this went down to, yeah, 6-4.
Yep.
So, okay then, there you go. That's your Pro Tour as far as that goes. There were, and this is always notable because it's a Pro Tour, there were disqualifications.
Yep. Welcome to the highest level of play where the rules matter. And yeah. Everyone's paying attention.
So, in round 6, Huang Haoshan was disqualified for intentional misrepresentation of the game state. The statement from the tournament's head official says, Wen Huang was in a disadvantageous position on the battlefield after activating the ability for a Long Tusk Cub, you know, the energy ability. The indicator for the amount of energy the player had at resolution was not indicative of the cost that was supposed to be paid. In other words, he activated it, didn't roll down the die. Okay. Once this happened, it was brought to the attention of tournament officials. Like you do. This led to a thorough discussion with the players to determine whether the action was intentional. As the error in regard to the energy spent benefited Huang, and because the detailed investigation could not clarify that this was simply a mistake, the decision was ruled that the action was a misrepresentation of the game state, and to preserve the integrity of the tournament, the player was disqualified. Now, you could read this two ways. And the worst way to read it is, oh, he was caught cheating and he got thrown out. Well, not necessarily. And the other way you could read it, that's the other end, is, oh, it was a simple mistake and he got DQ'd for it. Well, no, it's not that simple either.
Yeah, so I looked up comments about this, like, from him. And when he described what happened, he said that he activated the Long Tusk Cub, rolled it down by 2, activated it again, spanned the dice around, sat it back down on the state that it was in to start with. This was noticed, and the judges were called. Now,
oh,
I could completely see myself, the second activation of this thing, following the head math of the first activation. So you go from 7 to 5, and then you do it again. Well, in your brain, you're like, well, I was at 7, so you spin it around, you set it on 5 again. No one can prove whether or not he did that on purpose, but in order for the tournament to work, you have to enforce it, because when you enter that gray area of intent, it's not going to be something you can consistently enforce. So they did what they had to do. I'm hoping it was a mistake, but likewise, when you're playing in a Magic tournament, mistakes have consequences and you have to be careful about it. So it's unfortunate to make it to, you know, round 6 in a Pro Tour and then do something that gets you DQ'd, but I don't really fault the judges for doing what they have to do to maintain the integrity of the event.
Very true. So that was the first DQ in round 6. Later in round 15, there was another one. So a judge source nowhere, wait, what's the terminology that they use in sports? Hang on. A judge source not at all close to the situation has told me that this is a textbook example, literally, and we'll go into that textbook in a second, a textbook example of how to do this and get DQ'd. So, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name properly, so I'll say Yao Zile. I don't know where he's from. That would help with pronunciation.
Yeah.
But whatever, Yao and his opponent, LSV, Reach the end of extra turns in a match that would, if played to the end of that turn, result in an unintentional draw. Both players revealed their hands and discussed the possible outcome of who would win based on the available information at the end of that game. At that point, Yao mentioned that he needed a specific card to win, so he revealed the top cards of his deck to see if it would influence the decision of whether or not to concede.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, if you go, there's another handy link in the show notes, dear listeners, from the IPG Unsporting Conduct Improperly Determining a Winner on the Magic Judge blog. And it says examples. And example F is two players reveal cards from the top of their libraries to see, quote, who would win, end quote, after extra turns.
As textbook as it gets.
Quite literally. It's right here in the guide. And there is some explanation down below it. At the end of a match, it's fine for players to use current board position to make a case of who should concede to whom. However, they must make a decision based on what they see. Players may reveal cards that they are legally entitled to see, such as their hands. They may not reveal cards that they are not entitled to see within the game, such as cards in libraries. It's not allowed to make an offer like, if I drew another land, I would win. If my next card is a land, you scoop to me, else I'll scoop to you. And you can't flip up the next card and go, oh, look, it was a land, so you should scoop to me. No, that's not how it works. So, yeah. But it says, Yao, in arguing his case of his possibility to win, revealed cards from the top of his deck to discuss the outcome of a match. Because of this, the ruling was made that he used an improper method to determine the outcome of the match and got DQ'd. Literally right out of the book. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And it's not like he offered up something like, well, let's roll a die or arm wrestle me or, you know, rock, paper, scissors or, you know, heads or here's a dollar. Just none of that. It was, he just went a step too far to where the rules, like Bill said before, at this level of tournament, the rules are there for a very specific reason and you have to enforce them. So he just went too far and it bit him. So while that sucks, and it does, because he was, I mean, round 15, you're almost done, right? I don't actually
know. You're getting pretty close.
So wait, there are 10, I think there are 16 rounds because like the decks were like 9-1. So that's 10.
And then there's six rounds of limited.
Yeah. And then there are two drafts. So yeah, he was almost done and he was playing LSV, who finished in like the top 40 or something like that. Something like that. So yeah, this is bad for him. But again, you have to do it because rules. So yeah. Where did LSV finish? 42nd. There we go. So there you go. These are blatant, hey, everyone, watch yourself. Teaching moments, if nothing else. It really sucks that it had to happen to someone, but, you know, warning labels don't pop up until there's a reason for them, right?
Not usually.
So there you go. All of these links are in the show notes if you would like to read up some more. Okay, then.
Yeah, shall we talk about other things that came out over the weekend?
Yeah, I guess that's it for the Pro Tour, really. As far as news goes, anyway.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Well, most notably, today, From the Vault Transform was revealed. Which we've known about this for a little while.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we knew anything specific that was in it yet, or if it was... Did they reveal anything? I can't remember.
I want to say that it feels like they revealed stuff, but I'm having trouble remembering it, so maybe not. Like, I think we made some assumptions based on the finite pool of Transform cards, but I don't think they've showed us things officially beyond just telling us they were doing it.
Yeah, I don't think there were any, you know, From the Vault Transform, and look, here's one. I don't think they did that. And if they did, it doesn't matter because we forgot, so clearly it didn't stick. But yeah, so we were talking before the show, which you can hear if you are in the odds and ends tier on Patreon, we were talking before the show about how there aren't that many notable double face cards. There are way more actual double face cards than you might think just from, you know, thinking about it for a minute. Because yeah. I think over on the Mana Pool, we looked it up and we're like, wow, there's a lot.
Well, yeah, just imagine all of the different checklist cards you've seen and how many things are on those. Like,
yeah.
The original set had the checklist cards for, like, commons, uncommons, and then, like, the rares and mythics one. And that was, like, an Innistrad. But then they also had to do this for the additional ones for Dark Ascension. And then also you got more for the last few sets. And, like, each of these things has, like, 8-plus cards on them. It adds up.
He's not wrong. But as far as ones that were notable enough to be in a From the Vault, there weren't that many.
Yeah, especially if they're not just going to dump all the ones that just came out in this set. Right. So
let's run through them real quick. The first one mentioned, they showed off the first three that have new art, which have 6 pieces of new art, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But we've got the Scourge of Standard and Modern, the Huntmaster of the Fells.
Yeah.
Which was easily the most played transform card outside of blue. Pretty sure hands down.
Outside of blue, yes.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, so the Huntmaster of the Fells is really neat. This is the one, for those that don't remember, when it enters the battlefield or transforms into the Huntmaster of the Fells, you get a 2/2 wolf and you gain 2 life. And its backside is the Ravager of the Fells. And when it transforms into the Ravager, it deals 2 damage to something. Well, 2 damage to an opponent and 2 damage to up to 1 target creature that player controls. So you're on the human side, you get 2 life and a wolf. And on the other side, you get 4 damage, pretty much.
Yeah. And also the other side is a 4/4 with trample. So
there is that. It's capable
of doing combat, too.
So, yeah, you could... And because it's a werewolf, you know, on the front side, it's got the if no spells were cast last turn, transform it. And on the back side, it's got if 2 or more spells were cast by 1 player this turn, transform it. So it's pretty simple to manipulate it.
Yeah, it kind of turned the werewolf mechanic on its edge, because when the vast majority of the werewolves function as a, I'm kind of weak, but I'll get better. And then you don't want me to flip back. Like this one, you really want to just stay somewhere if you're the opponent. Because those wolves add up. The life gain adds up. The damage adds up. It just keeps happening. And Huntmaster of the Fells is not legendary, so it was very common to see a bunch of them. And every turn, like, oh, nope, gotta flip my wolves. Yeah, I'm gonna do 4 to you, 2 to this creature, and 2 to that creature. And, oh good, I've got a couple of 4/4s to hit you with. This is gonna be great. And it just happened. And that's not even counting the spells that automatically transformed them, too. So, it was great. It was the high-end power card showing off what you could do with the transform mechanic back in Innistrad.
He's not wrong. So that's the first one. The second one was a milestone because it was the first double-faced Planeswalker.
Yeah.
It was also the first Planeswalker to have 5 loyalty abilities.
Yep.
Which is kind of a cheat because there are 2 on the front and 3 on the back. But it's Garruk Relentless. Yay.
Yeah, he had big fancy stands and stores.
Yeah, he did. No, wait, that was... No, that was later. That was for the
big... No, it was him.
It was? I thought that was for the big 8 cost one or 7 cost one that killed Planeswalkers.
No, it was this one because he had his coat. And you could flip it, too.
Really? I could have sworn that was for the gold one. Because it was from the core set, and he had the big axe, and the whole point was to try to win his axe somehow or something.
They might have done one for both, but I'm pretty sure he had a thing. Huh. Because, like, I remember getting it.
I don't remember the random promotions for very long.
Like, I only remember it because I got it, and I put it outside of my friend's house and knocked on the door. Because that's what you do.
Well, yeah. So yeah.
Because, like, that one was in color. The other one was the black and white one. But, yeah, Garruk got both. He got a few cardboard stands. Because he's the big, scary Planeswalker man.
Yeah. But, yeah, Garruk Relentless transforms into Garruk the Veil Cursed. And much like in the story, he doesn't transform back.
No.
So, whoops. But he was pretty cool. Moving on. Of course, Delver of Secrets. The most insane blue one drop ever printed, I think.
I don't think anyone's going to argue with that.
I mean, it's a 3-2 flyer for one, which...
It's a 3-2 flyer for one that encourages you to play a lot of instants and sorceries in your blue deck.
Yeah. It's easy to forget that it's a human wizard on one side.
Which is something you remember when you see it show up in a human's deck. Because it's a human insect on the other.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, of course that got a reprint with new art.
Yep.
It's pretty neat. And then the rest don't get new art, because that's six pieces of new art right there, and these things have a limited art budget, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So the rest, we get Archangel Avacyn, who was huge and standard in her day, which just ended a few weeks ago. The one that really confuses me, one of the two that really confuse me, is Argyle's Bloodfast, that transforms into the Temple of Aklazots.
Yep.
But Bill,
I really think they were just taking a guess as to what from the current set was most likely to have some kind of splash and constructed.
Yeah.
Since they had to commit, you know, they had to put this together a while ago.
You remember when the From the Vaults would come out with a card from the new set in them before the set came out?
Yeah. That was back when they didn't come out in November.
Yeah. I guess this came out specifically for the holiday season.
Yeah. Because
it comes out November, what, 24th?
I believe so.
Yeah, November 24th.
Yeah, they would previously release these in the summer.
Ah, okay.
I think they were like, he comes out in August, I think, because that's how we got like sort of like Mind and Body and all that stuff.
Yeah, and in the first one, in Dragons, we had the, I can't remember what the, Hellkite Overlord, I think, maybe?
I think that's right.
Yeah, which was from Shards?
I think it was later than that.
Hellcat Overlord is from Shards of Alara.
Oh, it was Shards. Because when they started doing the From the Vaults of sets where they couldn't do that anymore. Like they couldn't do it in From the Vault 20 or From the Vault cards that were banned. So I guess the mechanics didn't really allow for that anymore.
True. So moving on to run through the rest of these, we have the second, I think, right? Double-faced Planeswalker, Arlan Cord. Wait, was she the second? Well, second one.
We're not counting the special human-y ones anyway.
Yeah, the second one is a Planeswalker on both sides.
Yeah.
The other one that sort of confused me, the Bloodline Keeper slash Lord of Lineage. I don't remember this thing being terribly big at the time in Constructed, but it is really cool. So I guess that counts?
It was a thing in the token stacks, not surprisingly.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And then we have Gisella the Broken Blade and Bruna the Fading Light, who are meld cards. Was that the word?
Meld, yeah.
Okay, good. My brain just was like, no. Who meld into Brazella, Voice of Nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, she was the... whatever. They were the two big name... meld cards.
Yeah.
The splash.
They meld the form cards. Devastated.
Pretty much, yeah. That was terrible, by the way.
It was terrible. But yeah, they were the flagship for the meld mechanic, because they just did it at one for each of the higher rarities.
Yeah, I mean, there were only three
pairs,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had the rats, you had the garrison, and you had them.
Right.
Because they really didn't want to invest too heavily on this mechanic if it wasn't going to work. And I don't blame them. Because, like, realistically, it's a hard thing to design around when you have to factor in card availability.
Yeah. Then we get Elbrus the Binding Blade, which is the artifact that turns into a massive demon.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I had to foil one of those.
Oh, nice.
That was one of the cards that kept showing up in my limited pools. Like, I had so many of them by the end of it.
But hey, man, when a player loses the game, he gets 13 +1/+1 counters.
You know what my favorite part about that is?
What's that?
when you lose the game, he almost gets 13 plus one counters.
Aw, now I'm sad. And then the other five are the five Origins Planeswalkers.
Yep.
So Chandra, Fire of Kalidess, Jace, Varent's Prodigy, Kithian, Hero of Akros, Liliana, Heretical Healer, and Nissa, Vastwood Seer.
Yep. Which, all of whom saw some play.
Yeah. I think, like, of those, I think Liliana saw the least, which is really weird. Well, maybe Kithian saw the least. Those two saw the least.
Yeah, Kithian had a niche. Like, he didn't appear regularly, but he did find his way into a deck. Liliana, I think, might have struggled from the fact that she cost three. And, like, Nissa was here because she was getting you land and stuff, so that was great. Yeah. Chandra was an option, but she was dealing with competitive red cards, but she still showed up from time to time. Kithian was the one mana planeswalker, so that's impressive in his own right. And also, he just filled that role of being a 2-1 for one that is sometimes indestructible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, Jace, nobody played. Don't even worry about him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was only in every deck ever that ran any blue.
He was worth more than Mind Sculptor. And that's weird.
Wait, really?
Yeah, there was a period of time where Jace, Friend's Prodigy was worth more than Jace the Mind Sculptor. Because Jace the Mind Sculptor was, one, not in standard or modern. And two, had been reprinted enough from the vaults that people could actually get them. Or from, well, the From the Vault 20 and also the Modern Master sets. Or Eternal Masters or whatever. Vintage Masters. He'd been reprinted in stuff. And Jace Friend's Prodigy was in a core set at Mythic Rare. And you wanted four of them in your deck if you ran blue for that year. So, and the fact that he was also seeing play in older formats means that he was expected to gain his value so they didn't just all pop up in the market when the set rotated. So there was a period of time where Big Jace was like $100 and Jace Friend's Prodigy was like $120.
Jesus.
It was weird. I, to this day, only have one Jace Friend's Prodigy, and it's a San Diego Comic-Con card because that was easier to get. Messed up as that is.
Just to clarify, he was printed in From the Vault 20. He was printed in Vintage Masters and in Eternal Masters.
Yeah.
Which wasn't one of those online only? All of these master sets have run together in my head. What the
I think Vintage Masters would be online only, because Eternal Masters and Modern Masters are the only master sets that have gone to paper that I can think of.
Yeah, Vintage Masters is the online only set from 2014. Okay, right.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. So,
but yeah, the point being, you could find them.
Yeah, in paper, Jace was printed World Wake, From the Vault 20, Eternal Masters, and as a... what'd you just say? Comic-Con card.
No, the Comic-Con card was Ren's Prodigy.
Yeah, that was the other Jace. Right.
Yeah.
I'm paying attention. Sorry, I was...
No, it's all good. But essentially, when, you know, Jace was in Origins, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And so once people stopped opening boxes of Origins, the stock was pretty set. And everyone running blue ran four of them. Yeah. Period. So... they were expensive.
Because you had to, because he was that damn good.
Yeah, he was frustratingly easy to flip.
I also have hiccups.
So yeah, you too can have one of each of the cards we just mentioned.
Yay.
By picking up From the Vault Transform.
In shiny, super From the Vault foil.
And because they're double-faced, they foil both sides.
What?
Yeah. On November 2-4.
So yeah, there you go. If you can get your hands on one, go for it. Good luck, though. All right, moving on, we have Explorers of Ixalan. Remember that? We talked about it once. It turns out that a few weeks ago, they put out a video explaining roughly, real quick, you know, what it was.
And yeah.
We missed it completely. Like, I was aware of it, but by the time it came to record the show, it had fallen out of my ear. And because it was not heavily featured anywhere that would make us put it in the show notes. Like, I think they tweeted the video.
Yeah. Pretty much we're going to look on the main website and specifically if SCG is doing something, we look in their tournaments, and I will look through like the Magic Online sections and the Tumblr and all that stuff. But if they just tweet it once on like a Wednesday, we probably won't find it the following week if we missed it.
Yeah, and if they use some bizarre other third-party nonsense, like apparently something was announced last week in a Tolarian Community College video.
Yeah, they do that from time to time.
Yeah, thanks, Wizards. Appreciate you. Don't make it easier for us to find all the crap. Don't make it easier for anybody to find all the crap you want people to know. Just spread it out all over the damn internet. Good job.
Yeah, I think the idea is that you'll go to the daily update post and track stuff down. But at the end of the week, I'm not going to go through 5 daily update articles to scroll through all of that when most of it is podcasts and stuff. It's not a primary news source.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit rough.
But that's okay, because Wizards doesn't listen to us. So, but yeah, Explorers of Ixalan. Rivals of Ixalan is the next set, right? Explorers of Ixalan is a self-contained Magic / board game where you have 4 pre-built decks, one for each of the races, the factions, let's say, in Ixalan. So the Legion of Dusk deck is the Vampires. The Brazen Coalition deck is the Pirates. There we go.
Yep.
The River Heralds is Merfolk. And the Sun Empire is Dinosaurs. And you have little hex tiles that look like they came straight out of... you made the joke. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, they look like someone picked up some pieces from Settlers of Catan and ran with them.
Settlers, right.
I acknowledge before people saying that, yes, hexes are used in a lot of things, but the tiles remind me of Settlers of Catan because you're building it from, you know, the middle out and there's a string of water on the outside, so it looks like a Catan board.
Oh. I'm like the one person in the known universe who has not played Settlers of Catan, so.
You're fine. It's fine.
You were about to talk smack about it and then stopped because of internet backlash.
No, I don't care about that part. I just didn't want to go too far into that.
Fair enough.
It is a perfectly adequate game. Better than Monopoly. Your family won't hate you as much.
Oh, God. Aren't most things better than Monopoly?
I would say yes.
Okay.
See, no one's going to give you backlash for that. Like, everybody hates Monopoly.
There's that one guy who's furiously tweeting right now. But
who's wrong? Yeah.
Who's wrong? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's that one.
Anyway, yeah, you get... the 4 decks, they're 60-card decks. They're real decks.
They're real Magic decks. They don't have made-up cards that are only usable in this circumstance in them. They're just decks.
The lists are actually in the this post, so please go look. You get 50 map tiles, 20 double-sided tokens, 36 +1/+1 counters, 4 scout markers, and 4 deck boxes because you have 4 decks.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh. It's $64.99 MSRP, and it's... When does this come out? Is it out?
You think they're going to tell you that? Available November 24.
Same day as From the Vault, so hope you don't want both, or hope you're loaded. No, what am I kidding? You're not going to be able to find From the Vault, so... This is your consolation prize.
I will make one note, though, that these are not standard legal decks.
No, not
just,
at all.
Just be aware of that.
Yeah, these are meant to be played... with this.
Yeah. So if you're like a store judge or something, just be aware that if a brand new player shows up and this is their deck, have that conversation politely.
Yeah. And there's not terribly much that's like super, what's the word I'm looking for? Super chase?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Like there's a time warp in the Merfolk deck. There's a blatant thievery in the pirate deck, which is hilarious.
Yet another Day of Judgment in Legion of Dust.
There is a Day of Judgment, yeah. A Necropolis Regent, you know, if that's a thing that you want.
Beacon of Immortality, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, double target player's life total. But yeah, I mean, these aren't necessarily meant to be bought and pillaged. They're meant to be played together as one, and there are... 8 new pieces of artwork included in these, and it looks like they've been sort of unned up a little bit. Like the Mass Mutiny card shows the guy backing away from the rest of his crew, and his arm is clearly reaching out over the text box, which I find really funny.
Grabbing the word haste.
For each opponent,
or actually grabbing until, but...
For each opponent, gain of up to one target creature controls until end of turn.
Oh, it's untap. Creatures. Yeah. Oh,
it's grabbing untap, yeah. The problem I have with that is if you're using this as a sort of like intro to magic thing for your friends, or not necessarily intro, but it's covering...
He's covering an important word.
It's covering, yeah. Okay, that's a little weird, but whatever.
You know, you those creatures.
But that's just a minor little whatever. Yeah. But yeah, you pay mana to flip up tiles, and the tiles have things on them, like quests. Like, for instance, Cannons to Starboard is a quest. The next time you deal combat damage to the player on your right, draw a card. Or they have events, something that just happens when you flip it up. Or they have sights that do things.
You don't use every tile every time, so there's a bit of variety here.
Yeah, so it's not like you're going to get the same game every time. So yeah, I mean, it's neat. I've said before, I like that they're making these boxed experiences for people. You just buy, and then you have it for when you have three friends over that know magic and want to play something, and you don't want to have to dig out decks and things like that, or you don't want to have to buy four different commander decks. You just buy this, and you're good to go, and it's got a little board game thing, so it's not just playing magic. You know, it mixes it up.
I also like the fact that you're still playing magic. Like, it's not like they licensed it out and it became, you know, a different game. It's straight up, you're still playing Magic, so.
Cool. Yeah, it's not like, what is it, Arena of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Which is an actual, what was that game?
Like Heroclix?
Well, it's literally using the rule set of another miniatures game.
Oh.
But as a not miniatures person.
Right.
I have forgotten. Hang on, Arena of the Planeswalkers. Board Game Geek, that'll mention it. Da-da-da-da-da. Nope.
It was like Heroescape?
Heroescape, I think that's the one.
Yeah, I said Heroclix before, I meant to say Heroescape.
Oh, okay, right.
Because they don't have little spinny wheels, so obviously it's not Heroclix.
Right, so yeah. But
yeah.
Like Arena of the Planeswalkers is essentially Heroescape with a magic skin on it.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, things like that. But this is magic with an added... It's sort of like Plane Chase. It's magic with an added thing that you can do.
I think that Plane Chase is the fairest comparison, because Plane Chase is also one where you can just play your deck like normal, but you can also spend some mana to interact with the special thing in the middle. And in turn, the special thing in the middle interacts with you. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's neat. It'll probably be worth a crazy adventure for the mana pool team to do.
Quite possibly, yeah. But yeah, there's a link to the product page, and also in the show notes, a link to the little short video that explains what the hell's going on. So I highly recommend you check those out, because they look really cool. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
But unless we've missed something, that's all we've got for the magic in paper.
Okay.
Right? Like, so that's it, right?
I think so. Shall we talk about the magic in ones and zeros?
I guess. Also, apparently, Unstable previews start next week.
Oh, yeah.
So,
woo.
That's a thing. Yeah.
They'll probably be entertaining to read, even if you're not planning on buying it.
That's very true. So, just so everyone knows, you know, look out for that next week.
Yeah.
Ooh. Also, I would like to take this opportunity... to thank some people before we dive into Magic Online, if that's all right with you, sir. That was you, Bill. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. I would like to thank the patrons at the Thank You Out Loud tier. So, a big thanks goes out to Kim Ho, Andrew Hunt, Al, Paul David, Lands Delicious, Timu Hellas Are You, John Morris, Stuart Slaw, PJ McMullen, Bosco Bertain, Casey, Nathan Hay, AJ Heavieris, Cody Buckawing, Jacob Jansens, Jason Kaus, Gothic Man, Patrick, Brian DeLucci, Stark Maximum, Dan Holm, Mike Millerburn, and the Beastfather, Aaron Goodwine. Thank you all so very much. I love you. All right, you may continue, sir.
All right, Magic Online news already in progress. Spoiler alert. So, yeah, as usual, Magic Online stuff gets posted Tuesdays, sometimes Wednesdays. We record on Monday. A lot of the stuff in the weekly announcements are old. If you want to stay current and be aware of upcoming events rather than ones that have probably already happened, go to the Wizards website, go to products, go to Magic Online from the dropdown, and then see the most current thing, which the next one will be posted on 11/7, unless something weird happens. So that said, for the notes here, there's a reminder that, as we discussed last week, Throwback Standard Gauntlet number 8, the Innistrad one, began last week on November 1 and will go away this week on November 8. It will be replaced by Throwback Standard Gauntlet number 9, Recent Past, which I'll go into in a moment because that'll really be a little more fun to talk about. So I'm just going to quickly skim over the other stuff and then come back to it. We've got updates to the bug blog. So let's see how Magic Online is trying to kill us all. As a reminder, the Magic Online bug blog keeps track of everything that's currently known. Be aware of what's wrong, because if you accidentally take advantage of it, you're cheating. If you intentionally take advantage of it, you are actually cheating, as opposed to still going to be accused and treated like you're cheating. And if someone exploits anything like this to mess with you, you can report them. Also, just in general, avoid things that don't work and pay attention for workarounds where they exist, because most of it's just going to be dumb interface stuff. So here's our new problems. First up, token creatures do not always display newly given keywords. That can be annoying when effects, like specifically token decks, usually benefit from things being given to the tokens to make them a little better. In this case, there is a workaround, though. If you just zoom in on the token, they appear. So that's just a display issue.
Nice.
This is funny. The key bindings for yes and no do not function correctly with shocklands, such as steam vents. So when you play these cards, you know, when they enter the battlefield, you may pay 2 life. If you don't, they enter tapped. That's a yes or no question. Will you pay 2 life? If you're using key bindings, apparently they're wrong, so click instead. Be aware, that's going to matter. I assure you, simultaneously, someone will do this, and the land they really needed to come in untapped will come untapped. And at the same time, somewhere else in the world, someone who is at 2 life will die. So, that's important.
Unless what it means by do not function correctly just means nothing happens.
It's quite possible.
That's the case.
I'm hoping that as well. They do not give us a lot of details here due to issues. All right. And finally, the third new issue here. Harsh Mentor. You know, that guy is in standard. I'm going to remind you of his triggered ability. When an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it's not a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player. Well, right now, the triggered ability also affects abilities activated from creatures in the graveyards. So
that's not the same.
No, that means that when your opponent is using an ability from the graveyard, they're still going to take 2 damage. That's not working as intended. And that also means that if you're running Harsh Mentor and this comes up, you're in a bad place because you've just gained an advantage from a bugged card. So maybe park that for a little bit if you're playing in formats where there are abilities in the graveyard to worry about. I'm sure there are some in standard because we've got Embalm. So, ew.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yep. So those are the 3 new ones. Check out the list. Be aware of all of it. They'll post updates whenever things are fixed. The next bug blog is going to pop up on the 16th, so just be aware. All right. So now that we've done that, we can talk about the gauntlet number 9. Note that I said the previous one was Innistrad era. This one's recent past, meaning this stuff is not old. We don't have to tell you all the details about these sets because odds are you remember them.
Yeah. Now, this is from when Theros was released, which was 2013, to last year. Last summer.
Right.
So from 4 years ago to a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And as we were looking over these during the odds and ends, I pointed out every one of these was a deck that we got sick of, except maybe one.
Yeah.
Like every week, oh, it's this deck again. Every one of these.
Pretty much. So if you are absolutely brand new to Magic, then some of these are going to be new to you. But I assure you there's also a billion resources talking about them because they're very recent. And the internet has kind of blown up with information on Magic in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So we're not going to tell you how all of them work, but we'll give you a brief summary of each one. So first up, Blue Devotion. The Devotion mechanic is essentially run a whole lot of things that are the same color and get a benefit. This one is rocking the power of Thassa, God of the Sea, and running the power of Tidebinder Mage, who is really annoying for lockdown, and Master of Waves, who is, like, I think the top end for this deck. And essentially, the overall way that the deck works is dropping a whole bunch of fish and killing you.
Pretty much, yeah.
And it does it very well.
What was the devotion? Oh, it was just Thassa was the devotion.
Yeah.
Wow, this was Thassa before the freaking land that we always talk about.
Yes.
Oh, because this was the first Theros set. That's why. What was Nykthos? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, well, it's like Shrine of Nykthos is the card.
What?
Wait, no, isn't Nykthos Shrine to whatever?
Yeah, that one.
Shrine to Nyx. Yeah, Nykthos Shrine to Nyx is the relevant one, and...
Yeah, and it's not in these decks.
Because
it was printed in,
Wasn't it printed in Theros?
Was it?
Yeah, it was just printed in Theros, I think.
Well, then why is it not in these decks? I guess they didn't...
They didn't need it.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
That was more common in the decks that it had to ramp.
Yeah. Does that mean we'll see it down here? Yep, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there. Don't worry. But yeah, so suffice to say the blue deck was very quick to resolve and animate a Thassa, and whatever you're doing, Master of Waves is going to go super aggro on you. And whatever you're trying to stop it with, Tidebinder Mage will probably tap down. Because, you know, it's red or green, which might be interesting in this little meta, but it'll find things to hit against most decks. And if not, that's why you have a sideboard.
And that Night Veil Spectre, dude. The Night Veil Spectre gave you 3 devotion.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when Theros came out, Night Veil Spectre's value skyrocketed because it was a thing that no one cared about.
Yeah.
Until you really want blue or black devotion. Because
yeah.
Night Veil Spectre plus Thassa, God of the Sea alone means you're only missing one blue mana symbol to turn her mm-hmm. on.
And I assure you, you will find one in the stack.
Yeah, chances are you've got a Judge's Familiar or a Cloudfin Raptor or something sitting there on the board already, so.
Yeah. And, yeah, the other key thing to remember is that Thassa has an activated ability that makes it so that target creature you control can't be blocked this turn. So when you kind of hit that critical mass, if they could have done something about it, and not really, Thassa's hitting you for 5. So.
Yeah.
And that's the best you can hope for. So, yeah, that's awesome. Black Devotion.
This is same the one concept, that really, really ruined Standard for a long time.
There were tournaments where it was straight up like 7 Black Devotion decks in the top 8, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and not ruined it as in like the most recent Standard. It was completely ruined. It was just boring because you played Mono Black Devotion or you heavily played around it.
Mm-hmm. And Mono Black Devotion was good because, for starters, they printed Thoughtseize again.
There's that, yeah.
Like, a lot of people were expecting Thoughtseize to show up in, like, a Modern Masters type set because they wanted it around. But no, they printed it in Standard, and Thoughtseize is busted. I don't know any other way to say it. Like, Thoughtseize is incredibly powerful. And it showed. you could turn 1 Thoughtseize, get rid of whatever they can do to stop you, and then before you know it, you've got Pack Rat, which is also busted in its own weird way. But
I did think it was weird. Pack Rat was always busted and limited.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until this deck when it was finally busted in Constructed. And Clues called it when it was first printed. He's like, this card is broken.
Yeah. Because
it was printed in Return to Ravnica. Or, like I said, it was completely busted and limited. But no one cared in Constructed until you needed all those little black mana symbols.
Yeah, because remember, the tokens that are a copy of Pack Rat still have one in a black, even though you don't physically see it on it because it's a token. Yep. So they're still contributing to devotion. And unlike the blue deck, where the amount of your devotion doesn't really matter once you have your Asa online, the black devotion deck is running four Gray Merchant of Asphodels.
Gary. Which good old Gary.
Gary, the wonderful hitchhiker of Asphodel, he has this amazing ability where you cast him and then you drain your opponent for a ridiculous amount. And then if that doesn't kill them, you cast another one, and then you cast another one, and they're dead because they just get worse over time. Because you drain your each opponent, by the way, for group games, it's even more sick. Each opponent for X, where X is your devotion to black, which, as noted, you've got all these pack rats lying around. You've got four Night Vale Spectres that are black, black, black. And you've got Desecration Demons. Like, your devotion is typically going to be somewhere around, like, 6 to 8.
Yeah, Gary and himself adds 2.
Yeah, and Gary himself adds 2. So you'll drain him for, like, 7. That's usually enough to matter. But if not, you've got more Gary. He's not legendary. And even if he was, it did not matter.
Yeah, I saw and heard people say many times, well, I never had a chance that game. My opponent drew all three Gray Merchants. Like,
dude, I once drafted 4 Gray Merchants.
Oh, God.
It was exactly as bad as it sounds.
Yeah, and limited, that sounds like a nightmare.
Because it's a common. The deck also ran 4 Underworld Connections, which was another way that it managed to hit its devotion. Because that's an enchantment for a land, so good luck dealing with that.
Yeah, and that lets you dig through your deck to find your Gray Merchants and mm-hmm. your Desecration Demons and your removal for the things that are going to kill you. Because it's running yeah. Devour Flesh, Doomblade, Hero's Downfall, and Ultimate Price. 9 spells that are just like, nope, kill that.
Yeah.
It's completely insane. This deck quite literally ruled Standard.
Yeah. And this was back before they, you know, freaked out and banned cards if they were too good in Standard. They just had it there for a while.
That just happened this year, so.
That's what I mean, though. Like, this is what you had. Like, black devotion, blue devotion, worse Standard until more cards came out.
Yeah, but this, like I said, this wasn't miserable to play like the most recent miserable Standards were. It was miserable for us because it's mono black devotion moving on every yeah. single week.
People seem to enjoy playing the cards. Like, these weren't miserable. You still played Magic. They're just, yeah. these were better than other strategies. And, like, multicolor was dead.
And it wasn't, like, ruining the format or anything. So when we say miserable, we're talking about it from our perspective in yeah. this particular case. But it was everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on.
Yeah. So moving on. I described a deck last week. This is actually the deck I was describing. More specifically, this is Sphinx's Revelation Control. So, like I said last week, Sphinx's Revelation is a card that gains you a bunch of life and draws a bunch of cards. There's an X in it. It allows the control deck, if it lasts long enough in control mode, to gain back any life it lost and draw a brand new hand of control, most likely including another Sphinx's Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
It's running 4 Supreme Verdict, 3 Planar Cleansing, so 7 board wipes right there. Here's some weird stuff for you. So it's got a bunch of control. You got dissolve, you've got syncopate, mm-hmm. you know, counter spells. You've got last breath to kill something. You've got quicken, which in part you're using to run a 56 card deck, but every once in a while you do it to board wipe at the end of your opponent's turn, which you could do.
Yeah, quicken Supreme Verdict at the end of your turn is just
it's
cold.
Rough. And it was running Azurius Charm, which had 3 abilities to mess up someone's day.
All of which were just insane.
All of them were good.
Yeah.
And the one that I hated the most was put target attacking or blocking creature on top of its owner's library, because you can just lock someone out of the game doing crap like that.
Yep.
Long enough to do what you need to do. It ran 3 Jace Architect of Thought, because this is Return to Ravnica Jace, and he did a lot of crazy stuff, and he was really easy to actually get up to his ultimate in a controlling deck. But the thing that really is weird about all of this is that it's running Elixir of Immortality. Just one. And the reason it's running just one is because it will draw it off of these Sphinx's Revelations, and it needs it because it's going through so many cards. Like, if you end up in the mirror matches, which were very common because the deck was that good, you might draw all four of your Sphinx's Revelation. Your opponent might draw all four of their Sphinx's Revelations. You are both fighting your way through to essentially find a way to kill each other off of your Jay sticking out a win condition or essentially waiting for your opponent to run out of cards sometimes. Because you hit your Elixir of Immortality, you pop it, and you gain 5 life. Woo! But more importantly, you shuffle the Elixir and your graveyard into your library. Bam, you're not going to deck yourself now. And
not to mention the fact that you've shuffled in your Sphinx's Revs and whatnot, so you're just going to draw them again.
You're just going to keep doing it. Like, there were games that I played where I saw 6 or 7 Sphinx's Revelations resolve. And as the game goes longer and you get more of those lands out, you were Sphinx's Revving for like 12. And suddenly you have the 7 best cards in your deck in your hand, one of which is another Sphinx's Revelation. And that's what the game turns into.
Yeah. And because it doesn't have that many actual win conditions. You've got Jace, who can dig one out from your opponent.
Yeah.
And you've got Mutavault.
Hitting them with a Mutavault.
And you've got decking them.
And decking them the slow way.
Yeah.
There are not mill effects in this deck. Now, in the mirror match, it wasn't uncommon to board in your Jace Memory Adept so that you can start 10 a-turning your opponent, or an Elspeth Sun's Champion, or an Archangel of Thune to actually have the ability to kill people. But for the most part, whatever they're doing, you're saying, no, no, buy some time. Now I've got too much life, too many cards for you to ever kill me. And these decks did not go to game 3. Very often, they won game 1, and that was all you had time to finish. This is grindy misery.
Yeah, it's not quite Lantern Control, because Lantern Control is at least actively working towards what it's trying to do, however slowly.
Yeah,
like, this is just sitting back and letting you die.
This is a deck that desperately wished it had access to like a Drown Yard or some form of recurring mill just to speed along the process. My version of this ran Elspeth Sun's Champion in the main because I didn't want to have to deal with game 2. So win or lose, I'm going to start attacking. But yeah, that was what it was. Sidisi Whip. There's your reanimator.
Yeah, so Sidisi Whip is the next deck, by the way.
Yeah, next deck is Sidisi Whip. And Sidisi Whip, long story short, it's a green-black deck.
Green-black-blue.
With blue, yeah. Green-black-blue deck. Because, you know, Sidisi. And it has a bunch of big, dumb cards in it. Like Hornet Queen and Doomwake Giant. And Soul of Innistrad, of all things. Yep. And in order to make this work, it's got Courser of Krufex, who you saw in every green deck for about a year. Maybe two years. You've got Sylvan Caryatid, Satyr Wayfinders. These are all things that are going to get you to land or mana sources. You've got Sidisi herself, who, for the most part, is going to give you like some time. Because
she throws crap into your graveyard too, which is important in this deck.
Yeah. She's going to throw some crap into your graveyard and, you know, make some zombies incidentally when some of these 22 creatures fall in there.
Mm-hmm.
You got some murder and all that. But then Whip of Erebos, the reason they call it this is Whip of Erebos, aside from giving our creatures lifelink so that you get some time, 2 black and tap the whip, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, it gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step, and there's not really any ways to cheese around that. Do it as a sorcery. So, in practice, Sidisi comes in, dumps something big in the graveyard, you whip it back out. Whenever Sidisi attacks, she dumps some more stuff in, you whip it back out. Repeat. It just works.
And, like, each one has stuff going on. The Hornet Queen brings 4 flyers with it that stick around once the Hornet Queen goes away.
Yeah, the Hornet Queen goes away, but you've still got 4 death-touching 1/1 flyers.
Yeah, like the Doomwake Giant shows up and gives your opponent's creatures -1/-1. If you play more enchantment, or enchantment creatures in this case, then they get more -1s. The Soul of Innistrad is just big and stupid and gets things back from your graveyard. If you're late enough into the game to get lots of mana, you can whip it out You can use the whip to bring back the Soul of Innistrad and then get other things back to your hand using it. Like, it's just...
it's an efficient engine.
Yeah, it just always has something to do.
Yep, and on top of all of that, we've got Ashiok Nightwear Weaver, the Planeswalker, who also has some reanimation powers.
Yeah. So,
only
yeah.
Hers are kind of different because she's getting your opponent stuff, right?
Or yeah.
Exiled. Theirs, I guess. Ashiok got neutral gender, but just before people tell me.
Exile the top three cards of target opponent's library for +2. And then for -X, you put a creature card with converted mana cost X or less, or converted mana cost X, that was exiled with Ashiok, onto the battlefield under your control. So you just keep milling away until you hit something you like, and then you oh, that's mine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just as another thing you can be doing at the same time with the deck.
It's got enough stuff to do in addition to reanimation that it works. And honestly, just running out the mana ramp means you can start casting these things without needing the whip. Like, the reason the deck works so well is because if someone prevents you from actually getting the whip online, it's still got stuff to do. It's still ramping. It's still got stuff. It's still got kill spells. It's still thought seizing whatever you were going to do anyway. It works really well.
Yeah.
All right. Moving along. Obzon.
Oh, God.
You know, that genre of decks. They've boiled this one down to a specific one. Let's just cut to the chase. It's got Siege Rhino in it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they all have in common. Siege Rhino, super busted.
Like, we were making jokes at the time that there were Abzan aggro decks, Abzan mid-range decks, Abzan aggro mid-range decks, Abzan control decks, Abzan mid-range control decks, Abzan aggro control decks. Like these three colors had this core of a few really good cards, and you could fill in the rest with whatever the hell you wanted, and it just worked.
To the point where they started doing things like Abzan blue or Abzan red, which is so stupid, but they called them that because that told you what they did.
Yeah.
But
there were... and, like, there were three distinct... there was an aggro, mid-range, and control version of Abzan. And then there were variations that were mixtures of two of the three. I swear, at one point, there was an aggro control Abzan.
Yep, like, I remember it. You're not even making that up.
I didn't think I was. So,
no, it was all of everywhere. These decks, they boiled around just having the best creatures in the format at the time.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. Siege Rhino was ridiculous. It's a 4/5 with trample that drains each opponent for 3 life when it comes in. And that's massive because it only costs 4 mana.
Yeah, you could stop at 4/5 with trample for 4 and it would be pretty good. But then it sucks 3 out of your opponent and it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, this deck is what Seth Manfield... hey, timing. Is what Seth Manfield used to win the world championship.
Yeah. In a mirror match.
Of course it was a mirror match.
Because it was the best deck. Other great things going on in this deck. As mentioned before, Courser Crufex and everything that could run green. Because...
it's so good.
Even looking at it, it's amazing how good it is. Because you play with the top card of your library revealed. You can play that off the top of your library if it's a land. And when a land enters the battlefield under your control, whether or not you're playing it this way, you gain a life. So you were gaining life. You were getting ahead on cards. You were very unlikely to top deck a land.
It's a 2/4 for 3.
And it's a wall.
So, like, aggro decks just had to really work to bust through this 2/4 for 3 that was gaining you life.
And ramping you.
Yeah. It's just it's such a stupid card. Like, it was really good. It was so stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, look, here's Nissa Vestwood Seer that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yep, she's ramping things along, doing her job. You got Tasigur, who now is known for his appearances in Modern.
Yeah, yeah.
Delving it up, loading that graveyard, doing cool stuff with it. You had Abzan Charm, which is also crazy. Bioblight, Hero's Downfall, Silence the Believers, Test Strive, not that anyone remembers that. Ultimate Price, and then you've also got 2 Languish for killing a whole bunch of creatures. 4 Thought Seize because you ran black at that point in time. 1 Tragic Arrogance because the deck had the kind of disgusting break of parallel fairness with your opponents. So if for each player you choose among the permanents that player controls, an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker, then they sacrifice all other non-land permanents they control. The reason you're running this is because when you're choosing for your opponent, you can double up on the choices. So their Corsair Crucifix can be their enchantment and their creature, whereas yours could be my Corsair is my enchantment and my Seed Rhino is my creature. Suddenly, they're out more than you are. You've broken the symmetry. Oh. It was nasty.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, that was also why for a while there, they were all running the artifact creatures because of the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just let you cheese around all that stuff. And, of course, it's running Elspeth Sun's Champion, who is amazing.
I'm pretty sure Sun's Champion was the best version of Elspeth.
There will be people that will argue because they're each at different mana cost. I think Elspeth Sun's Champion is the best one, acknowledging that you would run her in decks that could pay six, because she's easily the best six mana planeswalker can think of right now. Someone might find an exception to that and tell me about it on Twitter, but I'm having a hard time thinking of a better six mana planeswalker.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because six mana is where planeswalkers get crazy.
Yep.
But Elspeth Sun's Champion made three tokens a turn, and then she destroyed everything big. And I mean, I guess you could use that emblem, but I mean, you never really needed to. Those three tokens she's making every turn were usually more than enough. Yeah, and she blows up Siege Rhinos.
Yeah, that's why cards like the Doomwake Giant were a thing, because Elspeth was just blah, tokens on the battlefield constantly.
Resolve Elspeth, get 3/1/1 tokens. You've now got blockers. She's going to do it again. She's going to do it again. Pretty much every turn. And if you cast something big to get around all this, she will kill it.
Yeah.
She's great. The only argument I could really make against her being a better Elspeth is just the fact that the 4-mana one does a lot of crazy stuff for 2 less mana.
Yeah, that's true.
They're all good. Elspeth is in that nice spot of never having a bad one.
Yeah, even her bad one was still good.
Yeah, like I ran all of them.
Yeah.
So that's Elspeth and Abzan, and it was great. Yeah. Moving along. One
that we got sick of talking about every week.
Yeah. Red-green monsters.
Yay, monsters.
Xenagos, he's Revelin. And this one's got Nykthos Shrine of Nyx on it.
Yeah, so, because look at what's in this deck. So.
This is a super ramp deck. You got your Coursers, as we just mentioned. They're great. You've got Elvish Mystic. Nyssa. You've got Nyssa.
Yep.
Sylvan Caryatid.
Rattleclaw you've got this Mystic.
Weird card called Rattleclaw Mystic that was also mana.
Yeah.
You got all this nonsense going on. And then you got the big stuff. You've got Dragon Lord Atarka, who costs 7. You got Genesis Hydra, who cost X black or X green green. I assure you that X is a bigger number. it's fine. You got Polukranos, the World Eater, who only costs 2 green green, but has a monstrosity ability that's going to eat all the mana you have lying around and destroy stuff.
Yeah, XX green to destroy all the stuff that your opponent has, pretty much. Like
more or less. In this deck, it did. You had that much mana lying around.
It's completely ridiculous. Oh, and let's not forget the Whisperwood Elemental.
Yeah, Whisperwood Elemental had Manifest, which sort of turns the top of your library into dudes. And that's great.
It was so just... And because everything in the deck is a creature or a planeswalker or a land, Whisperwood Elemental never whiffed.
No.
Well, okay, it could whiff on land, but...
Even if it whiffs on a land, you're still getting a 2/2.
Well, that's what I'm saying, like, for later. So Whisperwood Elemental says, at the beginning of your end step, manifest the top card of your library. So it's a 4/4 for 5, and you get a 2/2 that comes with it at the end of the turn. At the end of every turn. You know, every time you say go, you get a 2/2.
Yeah.
But the thing with Manifest is you could pay its mana cost and flip it up. So if you happen to manifest, oh, I don't know, a Polukranos World Eater, then you would go, oh, hey, look at this. Whoop. It's 5/5 now. And it's other abilities. Sacrifice Whisperwood Elemental until end of turn. Face up non-token creatures you control gain. When this creature dies, manifest the top card of your library. So you could respond to a board wipe by sacking it, And then when all your dudes died, you just get that many 2/2s, so a board wipe was actually impossible.
Yeah, it made it worse for your opponent, because now you have all these 2/2s and they've wiped the board.
Yeah, it's...
Some of which could manifest.
Yeah, most like, of which could flip up and be a Dragon Lord of Tarka. Ah! Like, it was just insane.
Yeah.
And Xenagos made so much mana.
Yeah. And Nykthos and this deck with all of these permanents that have green in them made so much mana. It just was crazy. Like, it's probably one of the better ramp decks I've ever seen, period.
And let's not forget, like, this deck can ramp so well, it's got two copies of the Ugin in the sideboard. Like,
just cause he's just very cause. Affordable. Yeah.
And if you really needed it, you could throw Gaia's Revenge in from the board. It also had Arbor Colossus.
Like, and if you're playing against blue, like, if you're playing this deck and you go up against the mono blue deck, maybe consider Mistcutter Hydra.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Like, it's just good. Like, this is probably the best green standard deck, right? That we've seen in a while. Like, just straight up green. Like, I mean, the Atarka is barely there.
Yeah, like, it's only got red in it because...
I mean, there's four of them, but it's very late, and you can cheese red if you need to. And the Xenagos, yeah. This is like, almost a mono-green ramp deck.
Yeah, like, if Xenagos didn't have red in it, then it wouldn't have Atarka. It would have some other... Although, Atarka's really good, so it would probably splash a little bit of red for Atarka.
It's barely splashing when the thing costs 7.
It's true. So, yeah. Yeah, it's really good. Like most of... Well, like all the decks we've talked about thus far.
Yeah. All right. So that's ramping. Yep. Let's go in the other direction. Red aggro. Bam. 21 mountains in this deck.
Yep.
It's doing what red does. You're going to run a bunch of really aggressive small creatures and a lot of fire. So... Abbot of Carol Keep, or Andy, as Clues called him. Fire Ring Crusader, Lightning Berserker, Monastery / Taylor Swift Spear, Zergo Bellstriker. All of these things cost 1 mana, except for Andy, who costs 2. You know, he's your high end.
Yeah, and I completely forgot that he was Andy until Bill pointed it out. And we called him Andy because the flames in his art are a big-ass ampersand.
Yeah.
So, an ampersand is and. So we just called him Andy. See?
That's how they get names.
It's funny, damn it.
But yeah, but yeah, this deck is... So Andy costs 2 mana. All these other creatures cost 1. They are all, like, essentially 2 or more power for 1 when you factor in all their abilities and what they can do. You have Exquisite Firecraft, you know, breaking the bank at 1 red. Do 4 damage to a creature or player. It's probably a player. And then you're running Fiery Impulse, 4 Searing Blood, 4 Stoke the Flames, also known as the like $5 uncommon, Wild Slash, and Lightning Strike. Here's a hint. Stoke the Flames says it's 2 red. It has Convoke. It does not cost that much.
Yeah, it costs red to deal 4 damage. And then you tap 2 of the guys that you just played this turn that don't have haste.
Yeah. So it's a very textbook red in your face deck, and it worked. It was good.
Yeah, and if you really needed to slow things down, it's got Chandra Pyromaster in the board.
Yep, and if you need to somehow speed things up more, it has Eidolon of the Great Revel in the board.
Yeah.
Everything is on fire.
And Satyr Fire Dancer, who I'd forgotten about.
Yeah.
Whenever an instant or sorcery spell you control deals damage to an opponent, the Fire Dancer deals that much damage to target creature that player controls. So now, Burn Your Face is Burn Your Face and your creature.
Yeah. So that's a very straightforward deck by comparison to all the other ones.
It's just straight fire, as the kids say. Do the kids say that?
I mean, they should now.
Fair enough.
Yep. All right.
So now we're getting closer to the end here, or the more recent end of the spectrum.
Yeah. So we got Esper Dragons. Because it's from the dragon set.
Yeah. I remember this too.
Yeah, it's got all those cards that Glues hated.
This is another one that was really cool. And then we saw it week in, week out, without fail, without any sort of change.
Yeah. So, as you could probably guess from the name, Esper Dragons is running the Esper combination of Dragon Lords. You've got Dragon Lord Ojutai and Dragon Lord Salumgar. And
Jace.
And Jace Vryn's Prodigy, because you're running blue during that year.
Good old Flippy Jace, always there.
Flippy Jace is always there to take advantage of your 8 sorceries and 14 instants, all of which pretty much boil down into murder and card advantage. It's what they do. And you've got one copy of Ob Nicholas Reignited, the Kool-Aid man himself.
Oh, yeah.
Burning through everything because he's destroying creatures and drawing cards. Really all you want black to do anyway.
It's true.
And there's really not a lot to say here. It's got a lot of control elements and that it kills you with a dragon.
Let's see. Let's run through the spells. Kill stuff. Draw cards. Draw cards. Oh, disruption. They discard a card. Oh, it's got transgress the mind. Hey, clues. Don't look at that. Let's see. Counterspell. Kill stuff. Kill stuff. Counterspell. Kill stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. And then it's got the two big ass dragons. Just because they're both really good.
Yeah, and in a pinch, it can hit you with Shambling Vent.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Shambling Vent.
Yep.
So moving on.
Yeah, moving down the list. Green white tokens. Also recent. Because this one is
this one has exactly Kaladesh stuff in it.
Yeah. This one's very recent because it's running just going straight down the list. We got Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, and Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. There's Zendikar buddies.
4 of each, by the way.
Yeah. You're going for the full 8 here. So Gideon, with his amazing ability to make knight allies, among other things, including an emblem. Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, with her ability to make plant tokens and make all your creatures 1/1 bigger. See, like that Gideon emblem. You're running 4 because you don't mind if either one of them dies once they do their job.
I actually saw many times when someone would go Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, remove all 4 loyalty counters to make an emblem.
Yeah.
Because why not?
If you don't want to have to defend him, then the emblem is a good investment.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to...
Or if you've got another one in hand, or if you've already got a board full of creatures, or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you... The thing is, when you play Gideon, you don't really get to use his first ability, because it doesn't... Like, he turns into a human soldier, ally creature, indestructible, all that cool stuff. He doesn't get haste, so you're not doing that turn one. So you're either playing him and making a knight ally, or you're going to make an emblem and chuck him. Mm-hmm. When you're running 4 of them, you're probably going to chuck the first one because you've got other creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So those other creatures are 4 copies of Archangel Avacyn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that flippy one we were just talking about. 4 copies of Hangerback Walker, who is the artifact I was alluding to earlier that everyone was running when they were running Tragic Arrogance. You've got 4 Sylvan Advocate, which it's really better than it deserves to be. Because it's a 2/3 with Vigilance for 1 and a green and more stuff.
Oh, wait a minute. It's showing Hangerback Walker as the Kaladesh version, but no, this was from Origins. Right.
Yeah.
My bad. I misspoke earlier. There are not Kaladesh cards in this deck.
Yeah, the closest we get, I think, is the Zendikar cards, which are a year off.
Yeah.
And then you get Thraven Inspector. He's the actual closest, I guess, we get. He's from Shadows of Innistrad.
Yeah.
And then you've got 3 Oath of Nissa, 1 Stasis Snare, 1 Evolutionary Leap, 4 Dromoka's Command, which is good because it's Command,
yeah.
And 2 Secure the Waste, which makes even more tokens. And like the deck straight up, make a bunch of tokens, make the tokens bigger, and if you need something to polish them off, Archangel Avacyn, because she's amazing.
Yeah, and I remember when we first started seeing Evolutionary Leap, it was really funny.
Yeah, that became less funny when we saw what happened.
Yeah, you just sacrifice one of your stupid tokens, who is probably about to die anyway, and reveal cards on the top of your library until you reveal, this Archangel Avacyn to put it in your hand. What? I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
And even if you just got, like, a Thraben Inspector, well, cool. Then you play it.
Yeah, now you've got another token.
Yeah.
And the deck's also running 3 copies of Westvale Abbey.
Right.
That was the card that I was thinking of earlier when I said that something was missing, but it's not a meld card or anything. It's just another good transform card.
Oh yeah, then this one saw a lot of play.
Yeah, I think maybe that should have been in one of the spots instead.
Instead of like the Binding Blade, maybe?
Yeah. Because, like, Erebus never saw any play.
Like, Westvale Abbey was always usually a one of in a deck because, like, it made tokens at an extremely slow pace, but you could pay 5 mana, tap it, and sacrifice it, tap it and sacrifice five creatures to turn it into the 9/7 flying lifelink indestructible haste demon.
The 9/7 I won.
Yeah, and it was a one of in a bunch of decks because sometimes you just had extra mana and life to make tokens, and every once in a while you could just win off an Ormondal, which is the name of the demon. Just, and so it became a one of all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, there's that one Westvale
Abbey. The cost of entry is very low, and the ability to occasionally eke out a victory from making tokens or a super demon was worth it.
Yeah.
So that's the green-white token stack. And finally, the last one on this list, we have Bant Company, as in Collected Company, everybody, Coco. You remember all the Coco decks, Chewy?
Unfortunately.
Also, it's amazing that all of these decks were over the course of like a few years, and they all feel like they completely dominated for 3 to 6 months, because they did.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you do the math, that's probably about right, actually.
Yeah. With, I think, Abzan having the longest run, but...
It was either that or Mono Black.
Yeah.
It was one of those.
Bant Company, if you're familiar with Collected Company, which you should be, but if you're not, look at the top 6 cards of your library, put up to 2 creature cards with converted mana cost 3 or less from among them on the battlefield, put the rest in the bottom of your library in any order.
And that's an
instant. Not surprisingly, this is an instant. Well, that's surprising. That's an instant, and it's only 3 and a green.
Yeah.
But that means that you've got a deck full of 3 or less mana creatures.
Most of which are completely insane.
And most of which have some kind of ability that gets around their cost. So you got Duskwatch Recruiter, who's going to get you more friends. You've got Knight of the White Orchid.
I completely forgot about Duskwatch Recruiter.
Yeah. Duskwatch Recruiter is going to get you more creatures.
Yeah, look at the top 3 cards of your library. For 2 and a green, this is the activated ability. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Reveal a creature card, put it in your hand, and the rest go on the bottom. And then when it flips, it makes your creatures 1 less to cast.
Yeah. It loads you up and makes it cheaper. And mind you, all these things cost 3 or less. So you want to dump your hand, it'll let you. Yeah, then you got Knight of the White Orchid, who, when it comes in, it lets you go dig out of planes. So that's just straight up get a land. You've got Lamholt Pacifist, who comes in as a 3/3 that can't attack unless you control a creature with power 4 or greater, which you will. But more importantly, it werewolves into another great, bigger creature.
Yeah, just a straight 4/4.
Yeah.
For 2 mana.
Yep. You got Reflector Mage.
Yeah, surely we all know that one since it was banned in Standard.
Real good. Yeah, the Reflector Mage that, you know, when it enters, return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. It can't cast spells with that name until your next turn. You remember how Coco is an instant?
Yup.
Yeah, this is thing costs 3 or less. You can just go get one. You got Thalia's Lieutenant, who... when it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each other human you control. Look at all those little guys you have out there that got bigger. Whenever another human enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on it. So your Coco is going to make the guys attacking bigger, or if this guy's out, makes him bigger. Inevitably. You have Thalia, Heretic Cathar herself, or Cather. I forgot how you actually pronounce that.
I always said Cathar, I think.
Yeah. Thalia the second. Thalia Mark II. 3/2 first strike, creatures and non-basic lands your opponents control into battlefield tapped. That's a rough effect to get for free. Free air quotes, but I mean, Coco, you're running 4 of them for a reason.
Yeah, and she has glorious hair.
It is majestic. Mm-hmm. Jace wishes his hair was that good.
Jace's hair will never be that good.
In part because I think Jace is one of those people who, when he's taking a shower, he's like, did I just use conditioner or did I just use shampoo? And then he never gets it right, because his memory's bad. see, everyone relates to that. We've all been there. So then moving down, we got Thraven Inspector, who shows up and investigates, meaning you get a clue token. Yeah. And you get 4 Trialist Tracker, because,
4 what?
Yeah, that was funny. Tireless Tracker.
There you go.
I realized I said it.
Yeah, this card that was the skirt. Like, any deck that ran green ran Tireless Tracker there for a good long while.
Yeah. Look, it comes with a clue. Awesome. Whenever you sacrifice a clue, put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker. This thing starts as a 3-2 that very rapidly becomes too much.
Yeah, even if you just sack two clues, now it's a 5-4.
It's a 5-4 and you drew two cards. Good job.
And you drew two cards and you only paid three for this thing. And plus you're getting clues just by playing dropping lands.
Yeah. Like it's... It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
And so, like, as noted, you got four Coco and you have four Dromoka's Command, which still amazing. Because it's got three good abilities on it. And one of them is removal.
Well, three good abilities and target player sacrifices an enchantment.
Yeah. Three good abilities and one niche sideboard ability in your main board.
Which, depending in this format, that's actually pretty good. Because a bunch of...
Oh, because of the enchantment creatures. You're right. Oh, that's messed up. Yeah, that's funny. Because you can kill a god with it.
Or a that stupid Courser of Crucifix.
Yeah. But, like, you can make them sacrifice a god who's indestructible.
Yeah.
So, that's noteworthy. But, yes, so, I guess in this format, four good abilities. Which is sweet. And, of course, you've got Tamiyo Field Researcher, who is amazing, but only really saw a play here because... Bant was not quite as big as the other decks.
Yeah.
But she's great. So yeah. There you go.
There's your recent past.
Yeah.
Throwback standard.
Yep. So when you decided you want to play in this one, you could play very different decks based on what it gives you. So be ready. Given that...
A bunch of these were Pro Tour winners or World Champions decks. So, like, these are all, obviously, as we've said, really high-quality decks. So much that, like we said, almost all of these felt like they ruled Standard for, what'd you say, 3 to 6 months each?
Something like that. Like, it felt like each one of them lasted until the next set came out.
Yeah.
Because we were getting the Pro Tours that pretty much greatly shaped the meta about 2 to 3 weeks after the set came out. Mm-hmm. And then this is what we looked at for 3 months, give or take a few upsets.
Pretty much. All right, then.
So that'll do it for Magic Online. Like I said, go to the website and check it out on Tuesday for more current stuff. And yeah.
Guess we're done.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Sign off time. So you can find me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinTheBob. There's no Iron Goblin, because we're going to say that it's probably still hiding in the movie theater so it can watch Thor again.
Dang.
Thor's good. Telling you that now. Thor's good. Chewie's going to watch it. It'll be great. I won't give you a bunch of details on it, but I enjoyed it. I'm also looking forward to the various upcoming movies, because when I went to see Thor, they're like, now we're going to run the Star Wars trailer. And I'm like, that's nice. I already know I'm going to watch it, so I don't need to pay attention to it. I saw the Black Panther trailer, which I'd been avoiding, but there it was, and I saw it, and it was cool. It's just at this point, like, I'm kind of hitting the area where I like to just go into the Marvel movies without seeing stuff if I can avoid it. Like, I haven't seen the Infinity War trailer yet. I don't need to. I know I'm going to enjoy it. I'm looking forward to seeing where everything goes next, so that'll be fun. Past that, next weekend, I have decided that I am going to go to North Carolina Comic Con in Durham, North Carolina, so... I'll be wandering around there if you're one of the local people I see at cons. Should be fun. I don't have to, like, stay in a hotel or anything, so that's convenient.
Wait, when is that?
Next weekend, like, after your stream stuff. I'm not going the whole time. I'll probably go over at some point in late Saturday and on Sunday.
Oh, say, so this coming weekend?
Yeah, I guess it's this coming weekend now.
Oh, okay.
Time is weird like that. But yeah, so I'll be hanging out with that for at least part of it. And guess that's pretty much it for me. I did finish Stranger Things 2. I enjoyed it. So really it's just been a good week and a half for media. So that's awesome.
Yay.
Looking forward to Justice League breaking that curve. But
oh, poor Justice we'll see. League.
Well, I mean, you know, it does what it can.
I do find it. I don't know if this is disheartening or expected or what, but two of the other big shared universe franchises have given up on the shared universe. If reports are to be believed, that DC is like, yeah, we're probably done with this.
We did Justice League because we had to.
And the Dark Universe thing that the Mummy was supposed to kick off, the Mummy bombed so bad that they're rethinking that now.
Oh. Hmm.
Which is too bad, because I watched a the Nostalgia Critic and the Angry Video Game Nerd did a review of the this year's Mummy movie. And James Rolfe, the guy who plays the Angry Video Game Nerd, is a massive horror movie fan. And he pointed out that the Universal monsters back in the 30s and 40s were the original shared cinematic universe.
Yeah, I suppose it would either be them or the kaiju. And that's way before the kaiju, so.
So, yeah. And then, eventually, you know, that sort of thing sort of stopped happening. And then Marvel brought it back and everyone jumped on the bandwagon. So Universal was going to jump back on the bandwagon that it built, that Marvel, you know, spruced up and made a hot rod. And then the first movie was apparently boring and lame and stupid and miserable. So now they're like, maybe we won't.
Oh. Womp womp.
I mean, I didn't see it. Did you see it?
God, no.
Yes, exactly.
Admittedly, I'm not the target audience for that, so I don't think that's as bad.
Well, apparently they needed to make it a, you know, an actual horror movie, and they didn't. It's a massive, generic Hollywood action movie.
Did Brendan Fraser show up?
I don't think so, so that's good.
Because, I mean, I think mummies have problems with Brendan Fraser.
Which reminds me, but by the way, everyone, the original Mummy movie was not the one starring Brendan Fraser.
That'd be horrible.
That was from, what, 99?
It was in the last 15 years, yeah. Because they did like two or three of them, didn't they?
They did three, but I'm pretty sure 99 was 18 years ago.
Did that tie in with the Scorpion King?
Yeah, the Scorpion
King. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, like, I don't know if you count those or not.
Was a spinoff after...
It's like a spinoff prequel or something. After the second one.
After the second one, I think is right. Yeah.
I just remember it because for me, it was The Rock, the movie, and it was really entertaining if you just gave up on him being anyone but The Rock in that movie.
Pretty much.
Because he straight up did like the eyebrow thing all the time. He was just being The Rock the whole time, and that was funny. I was really entertained. It was not a good movie.
Yeah. But the original, The Mummy, was from 1932. Just so everyone's clear. And then Hammer did their own version in 59. And then the campy Brendan Fraser thing happened in 99. And then the Tom Cruise horrible was 2017. Just so we're all clear. That Brendan Fraser one that everyone saw and remembers fondly was a goofy remake.
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure. So now that we've gone way off topic, I will do my sign off stuff.
Hooray.
You can find me all over the internet as The Manipool. So Twitter at The Manipool, Facebook.com/The Manipool. TheManipool.com is where you can find The Manipool podcast, which incidentally this week turns 10. The first episode was uploaded November 10th, 2007. And we are recording this week on the 9th, but 10 years.
So it could be posted on the 10th.
No, it'll go up on usually the following Sunday because of the
release thing. Right.
So, yeah. That's super awesome. We've come up with something not necessarily special, but something that's very us for the 10-year anniversary. But I'm not going to tell you. Ha ha!
So, you know that you have to enjoy this time that you have with it now before it becomes a teenager and hates you, right?
Yeah, we've got, what, 3 more years?
Let's be real. It starts at like 12.
Oh, crap.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, so we've got the year of 10, the year of 11, and then it turned, yeah, okay, so.
Yeah, then around 12, it's going to start, you know, just being uppity, and it's going to go back to those early phases where, like, the sound desyncs, and
God.
Randomly you can't hear Mike, and stuff like that's going to start again. Or maybe you'll get to those points where, like, some people will go, and so... Then I went to the top of my deck and I found exactly what I was looking for. And with silence truncation, that probably doesn't work. But I promise, the early days of all podcasts are rough. So when it starts getting uppity at 12 and 13, you'll know.
Oh, God. That network problem where there's a long pause where someone stops talking and then it compresses everything they said into like half a second.
And then when you run silence truncation, that just randomly means people speed up.
Yeah. Oh, the good old days.
Yeah, science.
I don't know how we made it.
Congratulations on 10 years. I mean, I guess that makes it a real, real podcast. We hit the other 10 threshold.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we hit the kind of real that very few actually do, so.
Yeah.
That's pretty
Now you can start measuring your show as in how many TV shows it went longer than. Like, you're coming up on Frasier territory, aren't you? Wasn't that like 11?
I have no idea how many seasons Frasier went. But now I have to Frasier seasons. Frasier went for, 11 seasons.
Okay, so now you have a goal. You have to catch up to Frasier. Like, that's the only unit of measure you have left. Like, episode numbers are meaningless. You have to go on seasons.
anyway. That's a thing. I mean, this show is what, like 11 and a half or something? No one really knows.
Sort of, but this is more like Saturday Night Live, where, like, you can't really just claim that it's continuous.
That is true, because, like, we're, like, what, the third iteration of it?
Yeah, I think we're the third class.
Yeah, so anyway, that'll be awesome. We're doing that this week. That'll be next week's show, episode 486. Oh, God, 486 is almost 10 years old. That's, like, what, 15?
Something like that.
I remember, no, it was older than that. I remember the first computer that we had in the house was a 486 DX2, and that was hot at the time.
Just need to call the episode The Lappy.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, so that's the Manipool. You can, if you want to help support what I do, because I also do YouTube, where I'm playing Cuphead and Lich King battles in Hearthstone. I've still got 3 more of those. At BlizzCon, they announced the next set, and I'm like, I haven't even finished the Lich King yet, damn it. So, I gotta get on that. But yeah, that's what's going on over on YouTube. I have a few more things that I'm gonna do, but I have to finish Cuphead first, because I love it so much. Actually, immediately before we started recording this episode, I was finishing the edit for episode 6. So hopefully I can actually render and upload that tonight before I go to bed. That would be awesome. Let's see, what else? Oh, I stream on Twitch, and let's not forget that this weekend, probably not Friday, because Friday, not only is it the Manipool's birthday, it's also my old man's birthday, and since Mom isn't at home, because she is off doing family things, taking care of her mother, I'm actually going to take the old man out for dinner. So I probably won't be streaming Friday night, but Saturday, all day, probably all night, Cap from Lair of Lore and I are doing a dual charity stream, benefiting Take This, which is a, oh crap, I forgot this is the last Monday Night Magic before this goes up, or before this stream happens, so I need to tell you what Take This is, and I'm not prepared.
Huh?
I'm like Illidan up in this piece. That's a Warcraft joke. We're, okay, About This seeks to inform our community, being gamers, about mental health issues, to provide education about mental disorders and mental illness prevention, and to reduce the stigma of mental illness. They're the ones who run the AFK rooms at PAX, or the various PAXes. And yeah, it's just good, especially because mental health in the nerd community, or the gamer community specifically, but the nerd community on the whole, is a big thing. And it's not talked about nearly enough. So, yeah, that's what we're doing this weekend. We're going to be playing multiplayer games, because he and I both have a crap load of, like, really good multiplayer games that we never play. So that's stupid. So we're going to do that. We're going to have, between the two of us, we've got, like, 12 ass loads of Steam games that we're just going to give away during the stream, probably tie it to donation amounts, something like that. Somehow, because that's legal, right? Yeah, that's a thing. So, yeah. Come hang out. Get some free games. Give to charity. Laugh and have fun. All that good stuff. The details aren't ironed out just yet, because Cap went to Vegas, and he and his, well, he got married to his now wife, Haley, so he's sort of away at the moment. But we're going to get it all ironed out later this week, and pay attention to social media for more details as they come up, or just come anytime on Saturday. We will be streaming on my channel, twitch.tv/themanipool, and his twitch.tv/layerofLore. Also, a big congrats to Cap and Haley tying the knot. I wish you all the best. I love you guys. They're two of my best friends that I've never met, which is a thing you can talk about in this day and age with the internet. It's weird.
Yeah, it means you chose to meet.
Did I?
Well, in the world of people that you met because you bumped into each other and now they're stuck around you and you're in a hostage situation or something, no, you don't have a choice in it. People on the internet you choose to talk to and continue to associate with, so it means more.
Like Bill.
Yeah, I would never be in a hostage situation with you. I would run.
Exactly. Like, you don't have to be faster than the vampire. You just have to be faster than the other guy that's running with you.
Yeah.
Bill, would really you trip me and leave me for Dracula, you bastard?
Not for Dracula.
Oh.
You think you... I know full well that you, as a soulless individual, are not going to sustain him when he goes for blood. There's no point in tripping you.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
Now, if you had dark hair and I could fool him, it'd be different, but...
What if I was wearing a hat? Would you trip me? This is why I don't wear hats.
If you were wearing a hat, I wouldn't think it was you, and I would think you were the vampire. This is our friendship, everybody.
Anyway. Right. If you want to help support what I do with all of these two podcasts a week and the YouTubing and the Twitch streaming and all that, you can check out the Patreon at patreon.com/themanipool. Where you can get Manipool episodes and YouTube videos early. You can get the early stuff and the odds and ends, which is audio files. Everything recorded before and after both Monday Night Magic and the Manipool that's uncensored and unfiltered. And it's just us talking about whatever. For instance, this week we were talking about all of the stuff that happened at BlizzCon.
Yep.
Before the show. And figuring out how to pronounce names and stuff like that.
We try once in a while.
Who knows what we'll talk about after the show. And if you what?
I mean, I could quite possibly rant about actually watching the Death Note live action movie.
Oh, did you do that on Halloween?
I did it after Halloween, but yes. And it's a story that I'll tell you about in the odds and ends.
Oh, no spoilers though, because I'm going to watch it at some point, even if just ironically.
That's the only way to watch it.
Oh, good to know. Anyway, why are live action movies based on animes always terrible?
I'll tell you about it in the odds and ends.
Fair enough. If you want, you can get the early stuff, the odds and ends, and I will read your name off with a special thanks on every episode of both podcasts and on the end slate for all the videos, the non-podcast videos that go up on the YouTube channel as a special thank you. So every little bit helps. I really do appreciate it. It helps me keep the lights on and pay the bills while I continue chasing the full-time content creation dream. Which unfortunately is still just a dream because I still have to drive. And tomorrow I get to drive to Myrtle Beach, but not leave till after lunch. So it screws up my whole day and my whole night because I probably, by the way, I won't be streaming tomorrow night because I probably won't get back to the apartment until like 10, 9 if I'm lucky. I am not lucky, so like 10. But anyway, enough about all of that. This has been Monday Night Magic number, here it is, 583. Thank you all so very much for listening, and go play some magic.